Frank sat on a bench outside the general store and smoked. He knew he ought to saddle up and ride on. Knew if he stayed, he was going to get involved in a bad fight. But he kept delaying his departure. Frank put his hand out and petted Wolf's big head. The cur licked Frank's hand and then lay down beside him and went to sleep. Frank watched as a lone rider rode slowly into the settlement. Frank's eyes narrowed as he recognized the man, Steve Harlan. The ranchers were really getting serious now. Harlan was quick, mean, and deadly. If he had any feeling for human life at all, Frank had never met anyone who had witnessed it. No one knew for sure where Harlan was from. Some said he was from Missouri, others said Kansas. Steve was about Frank's age and height, but not quite as muscular. Frank continued to sit on the bench as Harlan approached, the gunslick reining up when he spotted and recognized Frank. He sat in his saddle for a moment, staring at Frank. Then a smile creased his lips.
Morgan, strange meeting you here.
I get around some, Steve.
Indeed you do. I hope we're working for the same side.
I'm not working for either side, Steve. Just passing through.
Oh, now, Morgan, I know you better than that. You always take the side of the underdog.
Wolf looked up, his cold brown eyes studying Steve.
Your dog, Morgan?
You might say that.
Mean-looking bastard.
We get along.
I suspect you do.
Steve swung down from the saddle and looped the reins around a hitching rail. He stepped up onto the boardwalk, sat down beside Frank, and pulled out the makings, rolling himself a smoke.
No hotel in this dump?
Rooms for let over at the saloon.
They nice?
They're clean.
No fleas or cooties?
I haven't scratched once since I got here.
I insisted on a hotel. I hate bunkhouses.
I recall that.
Frank remembered that Harlan used to take some ribbing about being so fastidious. The ribbing stopped quite abruptly after Steve killed one of his tormentors. No one had ribbed him about that particular quirk of his since that incident.
Who hired you, Steve?
I've had offers from both the GP and the Diamond. I haven't made up my mind as yet.
Shaping up to be a real ugly one.
Aren't they all, Frank?
I reckon so.
I suppose you booked the best room in the hotel?
I think they're all the same.
Steve got up and swung into the saddle.
See you later, Frank. Perhaps we could have a drink together before dinner.
Maybe so.
Steve nodded his head and rode over to the saloon come hotel. Frank recalled someone once telling him that Steve Harlan had gone to a university someplace, had plans on becoming a teacher. Frank knew that when he wanted to, Harlan could use very good English.
You must know that fella.
Joe Wallace stood in the open door of his store.
We crossed trails a time or two.
But no trouble between you?
Not yet.
Still haven't made up your mind, eh, Mr. Morgan?
I won't, until I'm pushed.
Maybe they won't push you. Ever think of that? Maybe they'll play the waiting game with you.
Hoping I'll get bored and move on? Maybe so.
Rumor is you're a rich man, Mr. Morgan. Any truth to that?
I'm not gonna miss any meals, that's for sure. Why do you ask?
Oh, curious, I suppose. Curious as to why a moneyed man would just drift around.
I'm a wanderer, Joe. I like to see new places.
Must be nice.
Frank did not reply to that. He was watching dust rise up outside of town, the thin cloud getting closer.
Group of riders coming.
He watched as the horsemen came into view. Joe watched the riders for a moment.
Grant Perkins and his hired guns. You've met Mark Rogers. Now you get to meet the owner of the GP.
I'm sure it'll be a real pleasure.
Yeah, right.
Joe stepped back into his store as Grant Perkins passed by. Grant didn't even glance Frank's way. He reined up across the street in front of the saloon come hotel. He and his men then stomped inside. Joe stepped back out onto the boardwalk.
One of Grant's kids must be passed out drunk in one of the rooms. Probably Victor. He's a mean one.
How many kids does he have?
Three. Victor, Lucy, and Robert. In that order. And they're all rotten. Especially Vic.
How about Rogers?
Three kids. Mark Jr., Peaches, and Mike.
Peaches?
Real pretty girl. About 20 years old, I guess. I don't know what her real name is. All I know is Peaches.
The kids of the ranchers get along? They socialize?
Oh, yes. Truth is, they feel they have no one else to socialize with. That's the way they was raised, I guess.
No one else on their social level. Sad.
It was Vic, like I said. There he is.
Frank watched as an obviously drunk Victor Perkins was half-carried, half-dragged out of the saloon and helped into the saddle. Grant led the procession out of the settlement, heading back to the ranch. He had not given Frank a single glance.
Vic must be a real quiet drunk. My sleep wasn't interrupted last night.
He is. He gets liquored up, gets him a whore, and heads for a room. The next morning, you can count on his daddy coming into town to fetch him back home. You have any children, Frank?
A son. We don't see much of each other. He lives back east.
His mother was killed, wasn't she?
Yeah. Several years ago. Think I'll find me a cup of coffee and ride out in the country for a spell.
Good day for it.
Frank had ridden east, careful to stay on the roads that cut through the valleys. He had passed three farmhouses, surrounded by well-tended fields. Some of the farm families had waved at him, others did not. After several hours of riding, he turned around and headed west. He reined up at a homestead and sat his horse, watching from the road as the family worked at loading up a wagon with their belongings. Frank walked his horse into the yard and dismounted. The family, a man, woman, and three kids, stopped and stared at him.
Could I trouble you for a drink of water for my horse, my dog, and me?
Help yourself, mister. Well's yonder, and the water's good.
You folks moving?
Yep. Pulling out.
He stared at Frank for a moment.
You'd be Frank Morgan?
That's right. I'm not working for the ranchers, if that's what you're thinking.
It wouldn't make no difference, nohow. The ranchers won this one. We're leaving.
But your crops have just been planted. You gonna just pull out and leave them to rot?
They ain't worth dying over.
Frank looked over what land he could see from the yard.
You have a buyer for your place?
Never asked nobody. Got two sections here. My brother owned one. The ranchers killed him last year. Threatened me last month. I'm quitting.
Nice, snug house.
Sure is. And there's a creek runs through the land. Sweet and cold. Deep well.
How much you want for the land and the house?
Are you serious?
Sure am.
What do you figure it's worth, Mr. Morgan? I mean, I was just gonna leave it and take my loss.
I'll give you enough to get started somewhere else.
Don't josh, Mr. Morgan. I'm up against hard times with my wife and kids.
I'm not joking.
It'd be nice to get set up back east somewheres, away from these damn murdering ranchers.
Well, not all ranchers are like the ones in this area, but a lot of them can be unreasonable for a fact. I can give you some cash now and the rest in a banknote. I assure you it's good. I'll give you the names of my attorneys in Denver and San Francisco to contact if you have any trouble. The only thing I ask is you not tell anyone about me buying you out. Anyone in this area, that is.
The farmer turned to his wife.
Mother, fetch me the deeds to this land. We're gonna be set up when we get back east.
After the farm family rolled out, Frank took a better look at the property he'd purchased. The house was well built, with a large living area kitchen combination and two bedrooms. The man had installed a hand pump in the kitchen, and Frank had tried it. Cold, sweet water had come gushing out. The farmer had donated a bed with a very comfortable feather tick, a table and chairs for the kitchen area, and a rocker for the living area. Frank felt like a king. He rode back to town and moved out of the hotel. Over at the livery, he rented a buckboard and horse, then went over to the store and bought supplies, including lamps, candles, bedding, and carpenter tools, including a box of nails.
You settling in somewhere, Frank?
Might be, Joe. I might decide to file on some land. Who knows?
Are you serious?
Sure. You never know what I might do.
Do you know anything about farming?
I planted a few gardens. Do me a favor, Joe.
Sure.
Don't say anything about this.
Oh, you got it. You want to surprise the diamond and GP, eh?
Something like that.
It'll be a surprise, all right. I'll keep mum about it, Frank. You have my word on that.
Good deal. I'll see you, Joe. Give my best to your missus.
Wolf hopped up in the bed of the buckboard for the ride back to the country.
Lazy thing.
The big cur showed his teeth. Frank had unloaded his supplies and then made himself something to eat and a pot of coffee. After eating his bread and bacon, he took a cup of coffee outside. He sat on a bench and drank his coffee and smoked a cigarette, waiting for the first visitor to arrive. It didn't take long. Claude Hornsby and Dan Jones rode up and dismounted. They stood at the wooden fence around the small front yard.
Mind if we come in, Mr. Morgan?
Not at all. Come on in, boys. Fresh pot of coffee on the stove. Cups on the table.
Are you going to farm this land, Mr. Morgan?
Name is Frank, not Mister. I knew word would get out about my buying this land. I didn't think it would be this quick.
People saw you driving a buckboard. They put two and two together, that's all. I reckon I should say they hope that two and two made four.
I bought this land, yeah.
You gonna farm it?
Gonna live here. You and Claude wanna work the land for the crops?
Are you joking?
No, Claude. You and Dan can split them 50-50. I'm not much of a farmer.
You bet we will.
And it's a deal.
Frank stood up and shook hands with the men.
We got us a partnership, boys.
After the men left to tell their families about their new neighbor and the deal they had struck, Frank sat on the bench outside his new home and wondered what he'd gotten himself into this time, although he knew perfectly well what was facing him, a bloody range war. He didn't question why he'd done it. Frank was known far and wide as a man who would always take up the fight for an underdog. He got up from the bench and went into the kitchen. He poured himself another cup of coffee, and then stood looking out the kitchen window at the spread he'd bought. He noticed some of the fencing was leaning and in disrepair, especially the small corral that was next to the barn, about 100 yards from the cabin. The barn itself also looked like it could use some fixing up and maybe even a fresh coat of paint. Frank shook his head. It was as if once the farmer decided he was going to have to leave, he'd quit caring about his farm and neglected to do the necessary work that went with keeping any place like this in good repair. Frank glanced at the box of tools he'd laid on the table earlier and realized he was going to be doing a lot of carpentry in the next few days. The thought made him smile. Frank had always enjoyed working with his hands, especially when the work was outdoors. There was just something about taking a place like this, pretty but somewhat worn down by events, and making it bright and shiny and new again, a feeling of accomplishment that few other endeavors could bring to a man. Seeing that the coffee was getting low in the pot, Frank added a handful of coffee and some fresh water from the pump. He then threw another couple of pieces of wood into the stove to heat it up. Wolf was still lying curled up next to the steps. It was almost as if the animal knew this was to be their new home for a while and was settling in and making himself to home. Frank smiled and sat on the top step. He drank his coffee and rubbed Wolf's hips just in front of his tail. Frank's eyes moved over his land, and his heart swelled with the sort of pride owning your own place can give. He wondered, since the feeling was so good and seemed to feel so right, why every time he tried to settle down and make a permanent home someplace, events seemed to conspire to cause him to pack up and move on sooner rather than later.
Well,
he realized it wasn't just events that caused him to move on, but the inner devil within him that seemed to always need new adventures and new places to see in order to be happy. Frank remembered a few years back, over in New Mexico, when on an impulse he'd bought a hacienda and a couple of 100 acres of land that ran alongside the only creek in the area that held water year-round. He'd thought at the time he'd had enough roaming around and that it might be time for him to settle down and set a spell. Things had gone well for almost 6 months. Frank had bought a few sheep and goats, about the only livestock he could think of that would just about take care of themselves and they could live off the desert-like land of his ranch. He'd even gone to a few socials in town and had started keeping company, as they say, with a young Mexican widow named Maria. It was nothing serious, and since Maria had been married before, they hadn't needed a chaperone on their many picnics and rides through the countryside. He was just beginning to believe that he was settled in for good, when once again fate, or the devil within him, reared its ugly head. He went into town one Saturday and rode directly to Maria's house. They had a date to go riding out in the country. Frank had found a natural dam in the creek next to his place where the water backed up and formed a small lake surrounded by cottonwood trees. It was an ideal place for a swim, followed by a picnic in the shade of the trees. Knocking on Maria's door, he was surprised when it was opened by Esperanza, Maria's aunt. She was dressed all in black, and her face was flushed and tear-stained.
Esperanza, what's wrong? Where's Maria?
She's dead, senor.
But how?
She took her life the night before.
Frank thought his knees were going to buckle before he could get inside and get the rest of the story from Esperanza. It seemed that the previous afternoon, Maria had been walking back from the general store toward her house, which sat on the edge of town, when a group of drunken cowboys grabbed her, dragged her back into an alley, and took turns raping her. When she went to the sheriff, the men all said that Maria had sold herself to them for money, and so the sheriff had said there was nothing he could do. Humiliated and ashamed, Maria had gone home and cut her wrists, bleeding to death in the bathtub she'd filled to try and wash away her shame. The sheriff was leaning back in his chair with his feet up on his desk. His face paled when he saw Frank, for everyone in town knew that he and Maria were courting.
Who was it, Bill?
Frank knew the sheriff would know what he was talking about.
Frank, listen to me.
The sheriff got to his feet and held out his hands.
There was nothing I could do. All the men stuck to the story, and since there wasn't no other witnesses...
Bullshit! You knew Maria. You knew what kind of woman she was, and you certainly knew she'd never do what those men said she did.
Sure, Frank, I know that. But as a lawman, I've got to have evidence before I arrest somebody. It ain't enough to go on my feelings in the matter, one way or the other.
Frank nodded. The sheriff had a point.
All right, Bill. The law can't do nothing, but I can. Now tell me the names of the men involved.
Frank, I can't do that.
Do it, Bill, and then stay out of this if you want to live to see your next birthday.
When Frank got to the ranch where the men worked, he saw all their horses reined outside the large bunkhouse, it being a Saturday and no one working this afternoon. Frank pulled his rifle from his saddle boot, unhooked the hammer thong on his Colt, and walked up to the door. Instead of using the door handle, he just raised his right foot and kicked in the door. He moved quickly through the doorway.
What the?
The man next to the first bunk went for his pistol, but was stopped cold when Frank slammed the butt of his rifle into the man's face. The four other men in the bunkhouse froze, their hands out from their sides. The foreman stepped forward.
We don't want no trouble, mister. What is it you want?
Frank jacked a shell into the .44-40 and leveled the barrel at the man.
We know who you are, Morgan, but don't none of us here have any business with you.
Do you know the name Maria Hernandez?
He smiled grimly when the men paled and glanced nervously at one another.
I thought you might. I come here to kill you for what you did to her.
Ain't none of us gonna draw on you, Mr. Morgan. We all know how good you are with a gun. We wouldn't stand a chance against the likes of you. And I know from your reputation, you ain't about to shoot no man down that don't have a gun in his hand.
Cowards, one and all, huh?
Frank turned, picked up a lantern on a nearby table, and flung it against the wall of the bunkhouse.
Well, you can stay in here and burn like the rats you are, or you can come out of this door with your hands full of iron and at least die like men. It's your choice, gentlemen.
20 yards outside, he laid the rifle on the ground next to him and waited. As the flames consuming the bunkhouse rose into the sky, the five men finally came running out of the door. They fired their pistols wildly in every direction, hoping to hit Frank before he could return fire. Ignoring the angry slugs, Frank calmly picked up the rifle, and he shot the men down where they stood. Frank walked over to the bodies that were sprawled outside the bunkhouse and placed a flower on each of them. Flowers that came from Maria's funeral bouquet. He climbed on his horse, then looked for Wolf. With Wolf following him, he rode off to the west without ever going back to the home he'd fashioned on the banks of a creek in New Mexico. He'd been drifting ever since. Frank stopped his musings as a couple of men rode up to his fence and reined up. Pete Dancer and Zach Spence swung down from the saddle and looked at Frank.
Come on in. Coffee's on the stove.
Friendly, are you, Morgan?
The men stepped into the yard, and Dancer nodded at Frank.
Afternoon, Morgan.
Pete, you passing through or hiring on?
I work for the Diamond, Frank.
Me and Zach both.
Sorry to hear that.
Oh? Why's that?
I hate to see anyone get tangled up in a nasty range war.
And you're not tangled up in this one?
Not yet.
You really believe that, Frank?
I bought a little farm, boys. I got people working the crops on shares. I'm not bothering a soul by living here. I want to be a good neighbor. But if I'm pushed, I'll push back.
We're not here to push you, Frank.
Who sent you to see me?
Nobody. We was on our way into town seeing you sitting out here. In case you done forgot your directions, the diamond spread is yonder way. This is just one way into town.
So it looks like I'm in the middle of the two spreads.
Sure looks like it, Frank.
That might put me in a bad position if push comes to shove.
It might, Frank. Was I you, I'd consider selling out. I bet that the diamond of the GP spread would give you a right nice price for this land, was you to ask.
And if you were me, you'd sell out?
I'd give it some serious thought. I sure would.
Frank looked first at Zach, then at Dancer.
No deal, boys. I like it right here.
Well, you've been warned, Frank.
Indeed I have.
We'll be going now. I reckon we'll see you around now and then.
Count on it, boys.
We ain't got nothing against you, Frank. This here war ain't nothing personal.
It's nice to know.
You're taking all this mighty calm, Frank. Between the diamond and the GP, there's about 50 or 60 men ready to fight at the drop of a hat. I'd give that some thought, was I you.
If nobody sent you, boys, why are you telling me this?
'Cause you're one of us, Frank.
One of you?
Oh, you know what we mean. You've been gunslinging for a long time.
But I never hired my gun, Pete.
Frank stood up quickly, and both men backed up, their hands instinctively dropping to the butts of their guns.
You boys are sure jumpy.
You know how it is, Frank.
Do I, Zach?
You're taking sides in this fracas, ain't you, Frank?
Only if I'm pushed.
Frank, I'm telling you, if you stay here, you're going to be in the middle of this thing. The big creek runs right through your property.
That's nice, Pete. I might decide to go swimming from time to time.
You acting the fool, Frank. That ain't like you. Man, you don't want no part of this here war.
You boys want some coffee?
Both gunmen shook their heads. They glanced at each other, and without another word, turned and walked out of the yard. They mounted up, then rode away. Frank looked to Wolf.
I have been warned.
His dog was lying in the shade near the corner of the house.
I guess I have officially taken a side.
Frank hitched up his gun belt.
All right. So be it.
Frank slept well that night and was up before dawn, as was his custom. He had washed his face and put water on to boil for coffee. He had let Wolf out to run the yard and do his business. The pre-dawn was chilly, but the heat from the wood stove in the kitchen would warm the house sufficiently. The coffee ready, Frank poured a mug. Sitting at the table, he rolled a cigarette. Just after dawn, Frank began a walking tour of his newly purchased land, Wolf padding along silently beside him. The land was rich and fertile. Frank could smell the strength of the newly plowed and planted earth. Standing on the bank of the creek, gazing down at the flowing waters, Frank could understand fully why the ranchers wanted to regain control of this land. But he also knew that times were changing all over America. The nation was growing, and people needed food. Food that came from the earth as well as food on the hoof. The farmers and the ranchers were going to have to learn to coexist. But Frank knew that blood was going to be spilled and men were going to die before that happened. But it would happen. It would happen even if federal troops had to be brought in to enforce it. And that had happened before. Gazing across the creek, Frank watched a few head of cattle grazing peacefully in the distance on ranch land. Frank wasn't sure whose land. They were too far away for him to read the brands. Frank walked back to the house and saddled Stormy. He did not lock the house. If someone was hungry, they could help themselves to food. That was the way it was in the West.
You stay here, stay close, Wolf, and behave yourself.
Wolf trotted back into the small barn and lay down. He lay with his head facing the door to the barn, and woe to anyone who entered who wasn't known by the cur to be a friend. Frank headed out. He was determined to meet as many of his farmer neighbors as he could this day. The first house Frank came to on the road was that of Claude and Mavis Hornsby. They greeted him warmly and invited him in for coffee and conversation.
Did two gunmen come to see you yesterday?
Yeah. Pete Dancer and Zach Spence. I was warned not to take sides in this range war.
They used the term war?
Yeah, Mavis, they did.
I guess it's all out in the open now.
Go armed at all times. Shotgun and rifle. If you don't have weapons, I'll get them for you.
You do that for us?
Of course.
You're a very complicated man, Mr. Morgan. I just don't understand you at all.
Frank smiled that away without comment.
Have you met the new settlers yet?
Yes, four families. They filed on sections west of here, down at the end of the last valley.
Good folks?
They sure seem to be. They're all from Ohio and Pennsylvania. Come out here to get a fresh start. They're all in their early 30s, with young kids.
Mavis refilled Frank's coffee cup and with a smile, pushed the sugar bowl across the table toward him.
When we finish our coffee, I'll saddle up and we'll ride together. We'll spend the rest of the day visiting every farm family we can. Those we miss, we'll see tomorrow.
I appreciate that, Claude. If we're gonna win this fight, first thing we have to do is get organized.
No point in my packing you a lunch. You'll be invited to noon by somebody.
Frank smiled, Mavis noticing that the humor did not reach his pale eyes. They remained unemotional. A dangerous man, she thought.
Take your pistol, Claude. I'll keep the rifle here with me.
The next house belonged to Dan and Lucille Jones. Frank and Claude were greeted warmly and invited in for coffee and conversation. Lucille had just baked bread, and the smell was tantalizing.
Got fresh churned butter and some good jam.
Thank you, ma'am.
And Lucille slathered butter and jam on her homemade bread.
We're here about the range war, Dan.
Dan frowned and glanced over at his wife. Lucille's face flushed, but she kept her eyes on the bread she was preparing for her guests. Frank noticed the look on Dan's face.
I can see that the thought of fighting in a range war bothers you some, Dan.
It ain't that, Mr. Morgan.
Please, call me Frank.
All right, Frank. Like I said, it ain't that Ma and me are afraid to fight and defend our land in a range war. It's just that we've been through all this before.
Oh.
Dan paused while Lucille moved to the table and handed Frank and Claude plates with thick slices of warm bread covered with melted butter and fresh strawberry jam and two mugs of steaming coffee.
Ma and me had this little hardscrabble farm over in Missouri a few years back. It wasn't much, just a few dozen acres, but the land was good and we were happy. We'd started our family and had two kids, a boy named Daniel after me and a little girl named Frances after Lucille's mama.
Frank glanced around the small house, and he noticed there were no signs of children in the place. No toys or small clothes or any other indication of anyone living there other than Dan and Lucille.
Well, we had this pond on our place that was fed by an artesian well, so it never went dry, no matter how bad a drought we was having. And that's what started all the problems.
Yeah. Other farmers wanting your water?
No. The railroad. Seems a group of real important businessmen in the nearest town had talked the railroad into buying a line that would go near my place. Trouble is, there weren't no good rivers or streams nearby where they could get water for their steam engines. After looking around a bit, they approached Ma and me to sell the rights to our water and to let them build the tracks through our property.
He glanced at Lucille and took her hand when he saw her eyes were full of tears at the memories he was dredging up.
Anyway, when I told them no, they got these Pinkerton detectives to start harassing us.
What'd they do?
The usual things. They'd burn our crops, tear down our fences, scatter our few head of cattle. It got so bad, I was afraid to let Ma go into town by herself.
Would you finally give up and sell to them?
Not then. But when I wouldn't give in to them, they waited until Ma and me were out at the barn doing our milking one morning, and they set the house on fire.
Lucille, unable to stand anymore, got up from the table and left the room. Dan's eyes followed her.
I really don't think they meant to kill us, but our two children were still in the house and they must have gotten trapped, because they never made it out of the place before it burned to the ground.
Frank reached across the table and put his hand on Dan's arm.
I'm sorry, Dan.
He knew the death of a man's children was one of the worst things that could happen to someone.
Well, after we buried him, we just packed up and left. Neither Ma nor me had the heart to stay in that place after that.
Dan's eyes raised to look into Frank's and Claude's.
Now, we're set up here, and there ain't nobody gonna make us run again.
That's the spirit.
Frank and Claude had gone over the precautions Dan and Lucille would have to take. Then they rode on toward the next farm down the road.
We're not gonna be able to eat any lunch.
I'm so full, I'm about to pop.
It's not that for me. It's a story Dan told us about the Pinkertons. Plum ruined my appetite. Whenever I think I heard just about the worst thing people can do to one another, someone always manages to show me something even more terrible.
But we'll have to eat something if we're invited. You know that.
Yeah, it'd be an insult not to. But coffee only at the next house.
Agreed.
And a thick slice of apple pie, as it turned out. Jessica Watson had just baked several pies, fresh and hot out of the oven, and she had insisted the men try some. They couldn't refuse. To do so would not be neighborly. After a few minutes of eating pie and talking with Hugh Watson, the men climbed back into the saddle.
This has got to stop. I'm stuffed.
Me too. But we might be in trouble.
Why?
Well, Edna Roykin makes the best stew you ever put in your mouth. She adds a lot of spices to it.
I couldn't eat another bite.
But he did manage a small bowl of stew and another cup of coffee. And at Edna's insistence, a piece of fresh baked cake. They rode away after chatting with Pat and Edna Roykin.
Good God! I think I'm gonna die.
We might be in luck.
About what?
Well, Callie Hastings is just about the worst cook in the county. Burl fixes most of the meals.
That's the best news I heard all morning.
When they rode up to the Hastings farmhouse, they found Burl Hastings hoeing some weeds in the small vegetable garden at the side of the house. He looked up and grinned at Claude as he sleeved sweat off his forehead and leaned on his hoe, obviously glad for an excuse to stop work for a spell.
Howdy, Claude. How are you doing?
Just fine, Burl. And you?
Claude and Frank climbed down off their mounts.
Can't complain, I guess.
I wonder if we might come in and talk to you about something very important.
Oh, of course. Come on in and set a spell.
As they entered the house, he glanced back over his shoulder.
Can I offer you boys something to eat? Callie ought to have dinner about ready soon.
No. We really can't stay that long, Burl.
Burl smiled and winked, knowing what Claude meant.
I really can't say I blame you, son.
Callie Hastings appeared from another room, and Frank could see why Burl Hastings stayed married to a woman acknowledged as the worst cook in the county. She was beautiful. She had long, flowing hair the color of corn silk, eyes that were as blue as the sky, and the kind of a figure men dream about on lonely nights under the stars. She was holding a small swatch of material that was obviously a quilt in the making.
Hello, Claude.
Howdy, Mrs. Hastings.
Claude quickly took his hat off and gave a slight bow of his head.
Callie's a right fine seamstress.
Can I offer you gentlemen a cup of coffee or some cold lemonade?
She put her quilting aside and moved toward the kitchen.
No, thank you, ma'am. We just want to have a few words with you and your husband, and then we'll be on our way.
Van and Virginia Kalin had just finished lunch when Frank and Claude rode up. Van was sitting outside smoking his pipe and waved the men to a bench.
You boys are too late for lunch. Me and the wife and the kids ate it all up. But we still got coffee that's hot.
Whew, thank God.
Coffee would be fine, Van.
Over coffee, Claude had explained the situation.
If you folks are gonna beat the ranchers, you gotta get organized. And you gotta go armed at all times.
We're not warriors, Mr. Morgan. I hunt, sure. But I've never shot at a man. I don't know that I could.
Not even if your family was threatened?
I don't know, Mr. Morgan. Yes, I reckon I could if that happened. Sure, I would. But that ain't never happened.
Yet.
You have weapons?
I got a rifle and a shotgun. I ain't no hand with a pistol.
Stock up on ammunition. And make certain your wife knows how to use the weapons. That's important. There'll be many times that you're away from the house. If you don't have the money on hand to buy extra ammunition, I'll help you.
We're telling everyone this, Van. It's war now.
Is this land worth it, Claude?
Virginia stepped out of the house to stand by her husband.
Is a piece of ground worth killing people over?
The rancher sure thinks so, Virginia. Look at what they've done to the Norton family.
The farmer's wife slowly nodded her head and walked back inside the house. She then returned with a coffee pot.
I made fresh.
She filled their cups and went back into the house.
You met the new people yet, Van?
Yes. Nice folks. They got a bunch of kids, too.
You tell them about the situation here?
I laid it out for them. They said they was here to stay. They filed on the land legal-like, and it was theirs. They intend to build homes and stay. I think they meant it.
We'll go see them now, Frank. We got time.
Let's do it.
As they climbed on their horses, Frank looked to Claude.
Let's just pray that the new people we're gonna visit haven't had time to bake any cakes or pies or bread yet.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go on a diet after this little trip is over.
The new settlers were still living in their wagons while they worked on building their homes. When they had all gathered around and Frank was introduced, they were, to a person, clearly in awe at meeting the famous gunfighter.
You're on our side?
Looks that way.
Frank eyed all the small children that were busy playing all over the place. He counted 9 kids, all of them under 10 or 12 years of age.
We have weapons, but we never thought we'd have to fight in order to farm the land.
Welcome to cattle country.
You sound like you agree with the ranchers.
Frank glanced at the woman. About 30, he guessed. Very attractive.
Ma'am, let me tell you something. When the ranchers came into this area, they had to fight Indians and rustlers. They suffered through drought and blizzards and the occasional flood. But they buried their dead and stuck it out. They tamed this land. No, I'm not on their side, but I can see some things from their point of view. There's land here aplenty for all of you, and the ranchers have no legal right to keep you out. But they're gonna try to run you out. Bet on that.
Or kill us.
Yeah, or kill
you. Would you look over our weapons, Mr. Morgan?
I'd be happy to.
Since the settlers lived so close together, it didn't take long for them to produce 2 rifles, 3 shotguns, and 4 pistols.
This is it?
We're farmers, Mr. Morgan. We came here to work the land.
4 riders coming. Riding in from the west.
I had to come through the pass, then.
Claude looked up the road.
'Cause the road ends about 2 miles west of here.
Frank waited until the quartet drew closer.
Gunslicks.
You know them?
I know one of them. That's Ray Hinkle on the black.
I never heard of him.
He's a back shooter. Shoots from hiding. And he's a crack shot. The other 3 must be real trash to be riding with him. Very few people have anything to do with Ray.
Where does he live?
No one knows for sure. Haven't seen him in several years. Thought maybe someone had done the world a service and shot him.
The 4 men reined up in the road and stared at the men, women, and children. Ray stared at Frank for a moment.
Morgan! What are you doing here?
I live here, Hinkle.
Morgan? Frank Morgan?
You taking up farming now, Morgan?
Maybe.
There's money on your head, Morgan.
So I hear.
Frank started to roll a cigarette.
Somebody back east wants me dead. You want to try to collect it?
I might.
Hinkle and the 2 other men quickly backed their horses away from the mouthy gunman.
We're out of this, Morgan. We've been hired on at the Diamond, but we wasn't hired to fight you.
Frank looked to the man who thought he might like to collect the bounty money.
What's your name?
Harris. Funny thing, Morgan. I heard it was your own son that wanted you dead.
You can hear all sorts of things, Harris.
You must have been a real sorry-ass father to your boy, Morgan. For him to hate you that much?
Frank said nothing. He had already been in communication with Conrad, his son back east, through his attorneys. The young man had heard of the money being offered for Frank's death, but claimed that he personally had nothing to do with it. Private detectives were working to try to find the man or men who had put up the money. Frank had never believed that Conrad had been involved in any way. Harris slowly swung down from the saddle, never taking his eyes off Frank and being careful to keep the horse between them. Harris had been over the hill and across the river, Frank thought. He's damn sure no pilgrim. He stepped away from the horse to face Frank, his right hand hovering close to the butt of his pistol. Claude and the newly arrived settlers moved swiftly out of the way.
Don't be a fool, Harris. Even if you got lucky and killed me, you'd never collect the money.
Why's that?
It's against the law to put a bounty on a man's head. Besides, you don't know who put up the money, or even if it's real.
That don't make no never mind to me, Morgan. I'll be the man who killed Frank Morgan. I'll be able to name my price after that.
Don't be a fool, Harris. Back off, man.
Shut up, Carter. I can take it.
You better listen to Carter, Harris. We've come a long ways for you to die before you collect your first paycheck.
Shut up, Brown. I done told you I can take Morgan, and I will.
This is crazy. You men, stop this. Why are you fighting?
Ask Harris.
Because we is who we is.
Well, that makes no sense at all to me.
It don't have to. It makes sense to me. Now shut your mouth up.
Claude looked at the young farmer.
Be quiet, Mosby. Stay out of this.
Draw, Morgan!
It's your play. If you're in such a hurry to die, you start it.
You a damn coward! I'm telling you to drag iron, Morgan!
The sweat suddenly started popping from Harris's face.
After you, Harris.
You nothing but a yeller dog!
I want to take the children away from here. I don't want them to see this.
Get your damn brats clear. Go on, do it.
The woman herded the kids away behind a wagon.
But I want to watch.
No, be quiet.
Now then, Morgan, you better hook that hog leg. I'm fixing to kill you.
I told you, Harris, it's your play. I won't pull on you.
Damn you, Morgan!
Frank stood very still, very calm. His eyes never left Harris. Nothing else mattered. His heart thudded slow and steady in his chest. He waited.
I'll kill you, Morgan!
Harris grabbed for his gun. Frank's draw was cat quick. The .45 caliber slug hit Harris directly in the chest.
Jesus God! I never even saw the draw.
Harris never even got his pistol clear of leather.
I want to see!
Hush! Is that man dead?
Dead as a rock.
Lord have mercy.
Frank walked over to where Harris lay on the ground and looked down at him. Then, without a word, he holstered his peacemaker and walked back to the group of farm families.
Well, bury him, Frank. And he was wrong. He had no call to challenge you.
Frank nodded and watched as Harris's body was laid across his saddle and tied down.
We'll be going now, Frank. I hope we don't run into you during this little dispute over land.
I hope so too, Hinkle.
Frank waited, giving Hinkle, Carter, and Brown time to get gone, then turned to Claude.
We best be getting back. It's a long ride to your place.
Frank looked at the group of farm families.
You folks be watchful and go armed. When you go into town for supplies, go in a group. I'll check back with you in a few days.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. We're glad you're on our side.
Yeah. I guess I crossed the line now.
He stepped into the saddle and lifted the reins.
See y'all.
Back at his house, Frank stabled, rubbed down, and fed Stormy. Then he fed Wolf. That done, he sat down on the bench by the front door and relaxed. He wasn't hungry and gave no thought to supper. He felt no emotion about the killing of the hired gun, Harris. Harris had bought into the game and lost. No one forced him to do so. Frank was very sorry the women and kids had to be there, but that was something entirely beyond his control. Several riders passed by, slowing to a walk as they approached Frank's place, but not stopping. Frank sat and watched the dark shapes of the horses and riders until they were out of sight. He then rolled himself a smoke. A lone horseman came up the road, coming from the direction of the settlement. The horseman reined up in front of the house.
Frank?
Right here. Who am I talking to?
Dave Moore. We met in the saloon, remember?
I remember. What's on your mind?
I'm pulling out, Frank. I ain't gonna have no part in killing women and kids.
Is it getting down to the wire, Dave?
Real soon.
You know anything about farming, Dave?
Sure. Hell, I was raised on a farm. Why you ask?
A smile formed on Frank's lips.
Tell you what. Why don't you spend the night here? You can bunk in the barn. Lots of hay in the loft. Hell, you don't want to be riding at night. Nearest town is miles away. Be dawn before you got there. We can talk some, and I'll tell you what I got on my mind. I think you'll go for it.
The gun hand finally wiped his eyes and nodded his head in agreement with Frank's suggestion.
Hell, why not, Frank? I don't like neither one of them damn snooty ranchers. I might actually like farming.
Yeah, by God. Getting back to the land sounds good to me.
I had a hunch it would, Dave.
Well, you got a piece of property in mind?
2 sections just up the road. Family pulled out last year, Claude told me. No one's filed on it.
Has it got a house on it?
Yeah, but it's not completed yet. Needs a little work to get it ready.
I can do that. My daddy was a fine carpenter.
And Claude told me the man left some equipment behind, too.
Sounds better and better, Frank. Come the morning, we'll ride over and take a look. If it's anything at all like you was told, I'll take me a ride over to the county seat and file on it.
Sounds good to me. Now then, how about some coffee?
I could do with a taste. Imagine, me a farmer.
Grant Perkins stared at Jim Knight, his foreman.
He did what?
It's the truth, what I heard in the saloon.
Ah, that damn drifter thinks he can come here and run the damn place, turning gun hands into sod busters. Those bastards, damn it.
You through now?
Yes, God damn it, I'm through.
Good. Grant, why get so upset about one man filing on farmland?
Because he came into this area to work for us.
So did Harris. But he got stupid and tried to take Frank Morgan. So what?
I didn't like Dave Moore first time I laid eyes on him. Jim, get my horse saddled, will you? I'm gonna ride over and have me a talk with Rogers. It's time for us to make a move.
Seems like a move has already been made, Grant. The Norton family is dead, ain't they?
I didn't have a damn thing to do with that, Jim. But by God, I'm glad it was done.
Killing women and kids, Grant?
If it has to be that way, yes. This land belongs to me and Mark Rogers. All of it.
Jim's eyes narrowed momentarily, and he nodded his head.
I'll get your horse saddled, Grant.
Frank and Claude met with the rest of the farm families homesteading in the long series of rich, fertile valleys. Claude deliberately left Paul Adams for the last one on the list.
I wondered when you were going to get around to me, Claude. Have a seat over there in the shade. Son, bring us a pot of coffee.
Right away, Pa.
The men sat on cane-bottomed chairs in the side yard, under the shade of a towering old tree. Paul looked at Frank.
So, you're going to play at being a farmer now, right, Morgan?
I filed on some land, yeah, Adams.
The rich farmer gave Frank a sharp look at the use of his last name. Then he slowly smiled.
You plan to really farm it, Frank?
I've arranged for Claude and Dan Jones to farm it on shares. I'm going to help Dave Moore plant his crop, starting tomorrow.
So, the gunman is really going to farm?
He was raised on a farm in the Midwest, I think. The land is in his blood.
But will he stick with it? Or will the pull of adventure be too strong?
Only time will tell.
I suppose so.
We're getting the farmers organized, Paul.
So I hear, Claude. It seems that Frank Morgan has done in one day what I was unable to do over the course of several years. You must be a real wonder worker, Mr. Morgan.
No, I just suggest things that the farmers should do, not order them to do it.
I was an officer in the Union Army in the war between the states, Mr. Morgan. I have found that people need someone to take charge.
I was an officer in the Confederate Army during the war between the states, Mr. Adams. My men did what they were ordered to do because they respected me.
Are you saying I have no respect?
Not at all. What I'm saying is there is a right way and a wrong way to do things.
Now, gentlemen.
Claude's right. Let's just leave it at you don't like me and I don't like you, Adams. But for the good of all, we'll work together.
I can do that.
Good. Yonder comes your boy with the coffee. We'll have a toast to working together, staying alive.
A very small smile crossed Paul's lips.
I'll sure drink to that.
Long after Grant Perkins had left the ranch house, Mark Rogers sat in the study alone, drinking coffee and brooding over the situation. He occasionally scowled at the thought of Frank Morgan buying farmland and taking sides with the sodbusters.
The country's going to hell. Next thing you know, there'll be a damn church and then a schoolhouse for all the squatters' brats.
What are you mumbling about, Mark?
Pat Sully, the new foreman, stepped into the office. Rogers had fired his old foreman after the man refused to burn down any more homes of farmers.
Pour us a drink, Pat, and have a seat. We got some war plans to make.
About damn time. Things are getting out of hand with them sodbusters.
Frank Morgan is the man who's getting them all together. I want him dead.
We got some boys on the payroll who'll be more than happy to oblige you.
I want the squatters to see that Frank Morgan is not bulletproof. I want him shot down like a mangy coyote in front of the squatters. Who's the best gunhead on the payroll?
Oh, Paco Morales, Pete Dancer, Steve Harlan. Take your pick.
Harlan still bunking in town?
Yes. He don't like to associate with normal people. He insists on a bath every day.
That's gonna make him sick one of these days. All that soap ain't good for a body. No, not Harlan. I hear tell him and Morgan is sort of friends.
Well, I'd call on Paco then. Oh, by the way, the news in town is that when Moore rode into the county seat to file on his land, Frank had him file on a couple of acres to build a church house and a school.
Mark threw his empty shot glass across the room into the cold fireplace.
Son of a bitch. I knowed that was coming.
It's gonna be built just outside of town, west side. Joe Wallace done ordered all the materials.
Call Paco in. He's got a job to do.
The beginning of the end of the dynasty of the GP and the Diamond Ranches came in the form of Reverend Richard Carmody and his sister Lydia. Richard was the new preacher, and Lydia was the settlement's new school teacher. Frank was standing with a group of farmers in the general store.
I wonder how the Central Church Committee back east heard of this place.
Frank said nothing, only smiled briefly at Pat Roykin. Without the farmers' knowledge, he had sent a number of wires out from the county seat.
However they learned, it's a godsend. Now we have a real church and schoolhouse.
And the Central Committee back east is paying their salary for a couple of years. This town is on the move, folks. Don't you agree, Mr. Morgan?
Wouldn't surprise me a bit if several businesses didn't start up soon.
Really? Oh, that would be wonderful. I wonder what sort of businesses.
I wouldn't know. I reckon we'll just have to wait and see.
Earl Martin, the blacksmith from over at the county seat, is coming in to set up a place. At least that's what I heard.
I know Earl. His wife Mary sings and plays piano at the Methodist Church. She's really good, too.
And we're getting a weekly stage run, too. They're gonna use my livery for team changes.
We're gonna be a real town.
Who's that riding up?
Dan was gazing toward the edge of town. Frank knew at first glance.
Paco Morales.
Wonder what he wants, Frank.
Me.
Frank walked outside. Paco reined up in front of the saloon. He slowly dismounted and turned to face Frank, standing on the boardwalk in front of the general store.
Frank?
Paco?
Is it a good day, Frank?
Seems to be.
For dying?
Are you planning on dying this day, Paco?
Oh, no, Frank, not me. Joe?
I have no plans to die this day.
Oh, plans can change.
Did Mark Rogers pick you to brace me, Paco?
You might say that.
Did he pay you yet?
Why would you ask that?
Because I want you to have enough money in your pockets to bury you.
You're very amusing, Frank. I always enjoy your sense of humor.
Right out of here, Paco. Right out. Live a long life.
Ah, Frank, you know I can't do that.
Why?
I took the man's money. No matter what people say about me, I'm not a thief.
I never said you were.
But you want me to become one?
Throw Roger's money on the ground, Paco. That way your honor is secure.
Then I would be a liar.
I don't see it that way.
It really makes no difference to me how you see it, Frank.
Claude, get everyone out of the way.
Paco walked to the center of the wide street.
All this could be avoided, Frank.
Oh?
Yes, you get on your horse and ride out of this area.
Can't do that, Paco.
Won't do it.
This is my home, Paco. I live here.
You live nowhere on a permanent basis, Frank. That's why you're an honest drifter.
Maybe I changed, Paco. People do change, you know.
Not you, Frank. You're like that man in the fairy tale, that Robin Hood person.
That's quite a compliment.
It was not meant to be such. Enough talk, Frank. It's time for you and me to settle this.
A small crowd had gathered, the crowd making up the entire population of the settlement.
It's your play, Paco.
It's your life, Frank.
Works both ways.
I suppose that is true. Really, though, it is a pity.
Dying usually is.
Oh, not that. What I mean is the legend of the drifter ends here.
Perhaps not, Paco. Have you given that any thought?
Men like you and me, Frank, we cannot entertain such thoughts. We have to believe our time will never end.
When I'm too old to live by the gun, Paco, I'll hang mine up. Ride out of here, go back home, and live a long life. Mark Rogers is not worth dying for.
I could say the same for your little piece of land.
Then I suppose we have nothing else to talk about, Paco.
It would seem so.
You wanted this showdown, Paco. It's your play.
Out of the corner of his eye, Frank was aware of a buggy stopping just at the edge of the short street. It was a man and a woman.
Reverend Carmody and his sister Lydia.
They sure picked a hell of a time to ride into town.
It's been interesting having your acquaintance, Frank. I will certainly attend your funeral services to show my respect.
The men were about 40 feet apart, Frank standing on the edge of the boardwalk, Paco in the street. The buggy rolled closer. Claude stepped off the boardwalk and walked into the street, halting the buggy.
Don't come any closer, Reverend. There's about to be some gunplay.
Some cowboys crazed by strong drink, I'm sure. How dreadful.
No, ma'am. And that's the Mexican gunfighter Paco Morales in the street facing Frank Morgan yonder on the boardwalk.
That man is really Frank Morgan?
Yes, sir.
Heavens.
Lydia fanned herself with a little hanky.
This is terribly barbaric. Can't you stop this, sir?
No, sir, I can't.
Paco, honey.
A soiled dove was in an open window on the second floor of the saloon.
Not now, Alice. I'll be with you in just a few minutes.
Hurry, Paco.
She's gonna have a long wait, Paco, unless she plans to crawl into the pine box with you.
Hey, you're being foolish.
I'm tired of this, Paco. Make your play.
The smile faded from the Mexican's face. Frank could sense that Paco was ready to hook and draw. Steve Harlan had stepped out of the hotel to stand on the boardwalk, far out of the line of fire. He stood watching with a look of interest on his face.
Somebody should stop those men.
I wouldn't get in their way for no amount of money.
Oh, I simply can't continue to watch this.
But Lydia made no attempt to avert her eyes.
You gonna stand there in the road like a potted plant, Paco, or make your play?
You must be in a hurry to die.
Paco's hand suddenly twitched, and as fast as a rattler's strike, Frank pulled his peacemaker.
Sweet Mother of Jesus.
No, this cannot be. No man can match my speed. No one can beat me.
I must go to that man. He needs spiritual comfort in his hour of need.
What he needs is a damn good doctor.
You watch your mouth.
You know where you can stick that.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah, and do it sideways, sister.
I never.
Well, in that case, you ought to try it, lady. Hell, you might like it.
Frank stepped off the boardwalk and walked over to where Paco lay. Reverend Carmody was kneeling over the dying Mexican. He looked up at Frank.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Why?
You've critically wounded this man.
No, I haven't. He isn't wounded. He's dead.